How you doing, guys? Dr. Nathan Thompson here with Exemplify Health Center, your Wellness Way affiliate in Yorkville, Illinois. Hope you guys are having a great evening. And I am coming to you live as promised. I have gotten hundreds and hundreds of emails of people asking about a follow-up on a previous video that I did a couple of months ago that showed blood work pre and then post first jab and post second jab. And a lot of people had asked, well, what's happening after a couple of months? And so as promised, we did some follow-up blood work. I'm going to go over that with you. And I'm going to show you the biggest concern that I have regarding this individual. So a little bit of a backstory, because it's hard to find this video. But if you want to go back and watch the first video, it is available on Rumble. And so you can just go ahead and type in Dr. Nathan Thompson, and then on the Rumble platform, you'll be able to find this video. But a little bit of a backstory, just so you know, because I had a lot of people, when I did the video, I didn't actually show all the complete blood work because I didn't expect it to gain that much traction. And usually when I'm going live, I'm just doing it to just talk to my patients especially. But this was shared a lot more than what I had originally anticipated. So I'm going to give you a backstory as far as what the blood work was pre, and show this just to get a little bit of a background so you guys are familiar with this. But the biggest thing that I can tell you of why we did the blood work was because we wanted to see what was happening to the immune system that very few doctors are actually measuring when it comes to a true immune system test, not just doing what's known as a CBC, a complete blood count, but actually looking even deeper into the adaptive immune system response, what are known as CD4 cells, CD8 cells, CD19 cells, natural killer cells, things that are involved with tumor cell suppression and also with anything in regards to handling a viral infection as well. So this individual decided to actually get the vaccine because it was mandated because he's a government employee and decided to get it. And I said, well, at least if you're going to get it and I can't talk you out of it, can we at least do blood work after the second booster and then follow up afterwards just to see and just get an idea of what's happening to the immune system as time goes on? And so we did that. And, you know, one of the things that we said from the first video that we did way back in, I think, the end of September, and we showed the blood work, and I'm going to show it again, actually, in a lot more detail. So just stick with me through the whole thing. And then at the end, I'm going to show you what the biggest concern that I have regarding this. And it doesn't necessarily involve the liver or the immune system unless he was continually getting boosted after boosted after boosted, which is what they're calling for right now. But the biggest concern I have is actually with the liver. And I'm going to show you this test, but I'm going to show you something interesting about when certain processes start to suffer within the liver, some of the symptoms that can actually take place. So, you know, following up after that second, the first booster or the second jab, you know, I had asked him, I said, hey, what's going on as far as some of your symptoms that you're having going on? He said, well, one of the biggest things that I'm really, really lacking is energy. He said, after the second one, I started to develop eczema. I started to develop a lot of canker sores in my mouth. But the biggest thing that I haven't gotten back is my energy. I am just absolutely exhausted. And I'm going to show you a lab finding that will explain it perfectly. But the biggest thing is, guys, is that this is a case study. I know that I got a lot of negative feedback, to put it lightly, saying, well, that it doesn't matter. It's just one person. But just remember, it is one person, and it's very important to that one person. So don't ever discount the fact of a case study, because to one person, you know, that it's very important to them. But this is how you actually start doing greater research, is actually originating from case studies. Because just remember this, guys, is that if this is only, and I believe it's affecting more people than just the percentage I'm going to throw out there, if this is more than just 1% or just 1%, I want you to understand, in the United States, if the government is saying this is how many people have actually gotten the jab, you're talking about 1.5 million people that are greatly affected by it. And to me, that is way too much. I think the percentage is actually higher. But I also think that there's not a lot of people who are associating specific symptoms with what is going on right now. And I have had people who have come in who have had a stroke, young people, And there was no doctor that would associate with it, but actually just doing some clinical testing, it was obvious that there was some kind of issue that was happening with the cranial nerves that can only be explained by having some kind of blood clot or some kind of infarct to the blood vessels that are supplying those cranial nerves. You saw it in the eyes, you saw it in the facial expression, you saw it with tracking, you saw it with cerebellar function, but all the doctors refused to actually look into that. And so I'm going to go over with you the initial blood work. I'm going to go over with you, you know, where this person started, what their blood work looked like right before, and then after the first, after the second. And I'm going to show you an update, which is about 10 to 11 weeks after the second jab. And I'm going to explain to you why I have concerns about this. And my question is this affecting a lot of other people? So let me give you guys just some background so you guys can understand this. I apologize if this is going a little bit long, but just remember, I'm going to go a little bit longer only because so that people can't say, yeah, well, and take certain things specifically out of context. Okay. So this is actually a panel that we had run quite a long time ago, almost probably 16 months ago. And like I said, this person actually came in with a lot of chronic pain issues, type 2 diabetic, on a lot of medications and things like that. And so I'll show you just some of his lab markers and kind of what they mean. So you can understand that, yeah, you can see how we improve specifically this person's labs. Okay. So this person you see, the first thing I want to show you is got elevated liver enzymes. Guys, the reason why his liver enzymes were elevated was because he's taking a cholesterol medication. That's why doctors are supposed to run blood work when you're taking a cholesterol medication every 6 months, because the thing that they don't want to see is they don't want to see this right here, elevated liver enzymes. So you can see his liver was hurting. And the fact of the matter is, was because he was taking a cholesterol medication. Okay. So he's got elevated liver enzymes. He's got high triglycerides. You can see this right here, high C-reactive protein, which is an inflammatory marker for cardiovascular events, heart disease, stroke, things like that. You can see very, very elevated. You also are going to see here, when you look at this, you see his ferritin levels, which basically is iron storage. Guys, when you see high ferritin in an individual, it is one of the telltale signs that this individual has what's known as non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And a lot of people have it because of the overconsumption of fructose, which was going to mean you're going to have blood sugar issues and things like that. There's a lot of people that actually have it. And you can see how high his stored iron levels are. You can see high estradiol in a man. You can see, pay attention to his cortisol levels, because you can see where they're at 16. Because I'm going to show you after the second one, the most recent one, how tanked his cortisol levels are. You see at 16, high insulin levels, very, very low testosterone. And then going into it, you also will see this. You'll see that his hemoglobin A1C, which is 9-day blood sugar average, you can see it's at 5.9, which puts him into pre-diabetes, okay? So here's someone who's coming in, low testosterone, inflamed liver, fatty liver, elevated liver enzymes caused by medication, very low testosterone, basically just felt like absolute garbage, okay? So moving forward, this is about 10 months later, and you can see we did some immune system markers, okay? Pay attention to the granulocytes, where they were, because you're going to see those things elevate after the second jab. But then when you look at this, and you can see his blood sugar levels went back down. So went to 5.9, down to 5.3, pre-diabetes into no longer being diabetes. Insulin levels went down. You can see his ferritin levels went way down as well. And a lot of it had to do with what we did with work with helping with his liver. I actually see his cholesterol levels go up. But guess what? He was off of his cholesterol medication because it made him feel like garbage. That was his choice. And then you see a C-reactive protein. This is about 10 months later, from 3.5 down to 0.8. So a lot less inflammatory markers that are going on. Okay. Now you're also going to see estradiol levels went way down, which is important for a man, especially. You can see his cortisol level still at 12.2. Testosterone started to go back up. So leptin levels as well going way down. Leptin is basically the hunger hormone. And so you can see he was in good shape. And really, you know, for him, we guided him through the process. Yes, he was taking some specific supplements. Yes, we guided him as far as with his eating was concerned. But he did the work. And that's, you know, one of the biggest things we tell you is I can guide you. I can tell you what to do. But ultimately, it's going to be you that need to do the work. So moving on, After he got actually the first jab, we said, okay, let's go ahead and do a more expanded immune system panel, because what we want to do is we want to see what's happening with your T and with your B lymphocytes. And these are the things that are responsible for antibody production and things that are responsible for handling cancer cell proliferation, tumor suppressing cells, the helper T cells, the things that are responsible for, you know, what they were actually quote unquote vaccinating against. And so this really has to do with a viral response specifically. Okay. So when you actually look at this, this is after the first jab. And this is what I went over initially, as I said, yeah, actually you're not seeing any like huge shift in any kind of immune system markers, other than very specifically, one of the things that you see is you see an increased percentage of what are known as CD8 cells or suppressor T cells. And that actually kind of makes sense, you know, because if you're injecting a spike protein, those are going to get taken up into specific cells, and they're going to flag as saying, hey, I'm virally infected. And these CD8 cells are going to increase in order to kill off those specifically virally infected cells. So when you look at this, one of the things that you see is that you can see is CD8 and CD4 cells are actually within normal limits. You can see that his suppressor T cells right here are actually normal. You can see his natural killer cells are actually normal. And then his absolute CD19 or his B lymphocytes, which are producing antibodies, are pretty much within normal range. Okay. So when we looked at this, we said, hey, we don't really see a whole heck of a lot, you know, going on in regards to this. You can see, pay attention to his neutrophil levels. And so you look at this and you're saying, hey, actually after the first one, you can see, you know, what was supposed to happen was supposed to happen. Now, after about 10 days after the second one or the first booster, this is what, where it starts to get interesting. And this was the only assertion that I made from this of what it actually looks like. Okay. You actually will see his white blood cell count after the second one start to go way up. But what's interesting is you see these percentages of granulocytes go way up. And if you guys know what a granulocyte is responsible, it will go up with bacterial infection, with any kind of tissue damage. And but you see the lymphocyte response start to go down, the white blood cells, so the B lymphocytes, and then the T cells. So you saw that the percentage started to go down. But guys, I'm going to show you something, because you also are going to see a CEA, which is a tumor marker, go from under 0.5 and start to creep up a little bit more. But then when you start looking at the actual numbers, so I'm going to go over with you the actual numbers, and not only that, you know, the percentage, but the total overall numbers. So here's what's interesting, guys, because number one, if you look at his overall T cells, the CD4 and CD8, so helper T cells, killer T cells, you can see from here, you can see that they are much lower. What you also are going to see looking at this is you look at his helper T cells, his CD4 cells are much lower. And you look at this, you can also see that his CD8 cells, which are right here, you can see they're on the low end. And then you look at his natural killer cells are very low. So what you're seeing is you're seeing low CD4 cells, CD8 cells, and natural killer cells. And guys, this is responsible for how you handle viral infections. The only thing that I said looking at this is I said, wow, after the second one, and you're seeing such a decrease in these cells that are supposed to handle a viral infection, what a perfect opportunity, guys, in order to have what is known as a breakthrough infection, or have a reactivation of a possibility of a virus that's already inside the body. So think of Epstein-Barr and chronic fatigue, or look at it making you susceptible to having an infection or having a breakthrough COVID infection. Now, I said this 2 months ago, guys, or 3 months ago almost now, and I said, well, this is a great, well, looking at this one person, I wonder how many people are getting breakthroughs. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand is that actually right now, the more that they are boosting people, the more they are getting sick with a virus. Do you have any idea how many people that are saying, I got two boosters, I got my third, and yet I still am getting sick? Because if this is happening in a lot of people, it's just making them susceptible to getting sick, and then the possibility of them, you know, testing positive on a PCR test, that is just not actually detecting an infection, but is just detecting RNA or DNA, whatever it might be called, you know, from having the actual virus within the nasal cavity. So that's what my concern was breakthrough infection, but also when you look at the high level of these cells right here, and I'm saying, well, is there some kind of tissue damage that is taking place inside of the body? Anytime that you see people, and I see blood work guys all the time, that doctors will miss this. And anytime that you're seeing a high granulocyte count, it means that there is a lot of tissue inflammation. And a lot of times it's very systemic, but a lot of times it's happening somewhere. Many times it's happening around the gastrointestinal system. And so doctors say, well, I don't know. I guess you're just trying to fight something. But we see this with people who are so, so chronically inflamed, and doctors haven't been able to give them any kind of answer whatsoever. So after he had this, the biggest thing that he had is broke out in eczema, started to see a lot of skin changes, started to see a lot of canker sores take place. But the biggest thing that I will always that will say too is that he said, I have so much fatigue and I don't have any energy. I've done a lot of videos about this, guys, about when people say, why am I so fatigued? Is it adrenal? You know, what's going on with my adrenals? Is it adrenal fatigue? And I always say, it's not adrenal fatigue, guys. It's inflammation. When you are inflamed, the cortisol levels are going to drop, okay? It just goes hand in hand. This is why, guys, if you guys have a lot of chronic inflammation going on and the immune system is going to work at night, cortisol levels are lowest at night, which allows you to be able to rest and be able to sleep. Inflammation goes up. If there's a lot to work on, you wake up in the morning and you're sore and you're stiff. And if you're remaining inflamed, very hard for you to be able to get out of bed. Just think, if I have an infection, I have low energy and I have high amounts of inflammation. So basically, you know, what this person has been experiencing is high amounts of inflammation. And what he's feeling is that he's feeling that he has very little energy. And this is energy in regards to trying to work out, doing the things that he did in order that got him healthy in the first place. And he's having a tremendous amount of a difficult time, you know, trying to get his energy back. Now, I will tell you, full disclosure, when I saw this on his labs, we immediately started doing some things in order to help with his granulocytes and with his lymphocytes. So we started to feed those specific pathways that help with stem cell proliferation, the actual facilitation and the growth of those specific lymphocytes within the thymus, and with, you know, decreasing that granulocyte and the systemic inflammation that was taking place. So I didn't want to say, hey, we're just going to wait. And we're going to just wait for you to get worse, because my first job as a doctor is not to prove my case as much as it is to say at first, do no harm. So if I'm going to do something to help him, I am going to help them. So yes, we did do some things in order to help his lymphocytes be able to recover. Yes, we did some things in order to help those granulocytes start to go back down again, because we're not going to sit there. We're not going to let him suffer. So I want to go into this. Next test that we did, we actually got this about 3.5. I got the results about 3 weeks ago, and I apologize. We're really busy and I haven't been able to really sit down and put everything together. And so now I'm going to do that. I'm going to show you a couple of things of why I'm concerned about what's going on specifically with him. Okay. Now let's go over, I want to go over with you his overall immune system markers, and I can see if I can actually find this. Okay. So the first thing I want to go over with you is I want to go over with you his immune markers, because what we did is we checked the immune system levels first. Okay. So going back up here, and then you can see is absolutely CD4 and CD8 markers, you can see are actually doing really good. Okay. You can see that his helper T cells, CD4 cells, are doing really good right here. So you can see as well, his absolute CD8 cells, his killer T cells, have recovered. And then you can see how low he was in his natural killer cells. And you can see his natural killer cells have also gone back up as well. So number of lymphocytes that he has, the biggest thing that I can say is that these have recovered. These have actually come back up. Now, that's actually a good thing. So people have argued, well, what happens long-term? Is it always just pounding down, you know, his viral cells that are killing viruses, is it pounding it down? The only thing that I can tell you is that this person has refused to get a booster, which it may actually take those levels down again. But the good thing for him is that they've been able to recover. And yes, we have been doing some things in order to help those immune cells start to recover. Okay. But here's what I want to show you is this. Okay. Because just because he didn't have any energy, I said, well, let's run a couple of numbers and let's look at some of the things that are responsible. So you can see actually his blood sugar levels are getting even better. You see his insulin levels are doing great. But you see, when you look at this, these are really going to be liver markers with triglycerides, with cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, which is the cholesterol that is getting sent out based on demand and need by the body in order to make stress hormone or to clean up any kind of arterial damage that's taking place. There's no such thing, guys, as bad cholesterol. It's only appropriate cholesterol. You can see that is CRP, best that it's ever been. But now, guys, when you start looking at this, these are some things that your doctor is never, ever, ever really going to measure. Okay. And you might look at this and you might say, what on earth is homocysteine, Dr. Nate? What is it? So there's two markers that you see here that are interesting. First one that you see is known as homocysteine. Now you can see that his levels are twice the level of the higher end. In fact, where we like to see that homocysteine levels is at 6, 7, 8, right around there. And so I'm going to show you homocysteine and what it is, but homocysteine is a byproduct of a process known as methylation inside the body. That's a really, really big word, but basically what it is the donation of a carbon and three hydrogens in order to convert one thing into other. I'm going to show you where it's needed inside of the body. Methylation is something that's not special, but what's special about it is the most abundant enzymatic reaction that's taking place in your body, but it's also primarily happening at the liver. This is also a cardiac marker for cardiovascular disease, independent of cholesterol and C-reactive protein. So homocysteine that you see in this is absolutely through the roof. And most of where methylation is taking place is in the liver. And if you are having a hard time with methylation, you will see homocysteine levels start to go up. Guys, the reason why this is important is that we also see this very elevated in people who have what doctors would describe as fibromyalgia. We see homocysteine elevated in kids with autism. We see homocysteine levels sometimes even elevated in with ADHD. We see homocysteine elevated in people who have high blood pressure. We see people homocysteine elevated with people who are having clotting disorders and things like that. So you see that this is a product, an inflammatory marker, and the methylation is happening within the liver. So my question is there something happening long-term within the liver? And here's the other thing too, is if you look and you see that this individual's vitamin D levels right here are so low, he's at 26, but what was interesting is that we were actually having him supplement with anywhere, depending on when it was, 5 to 10,000 IUs of vitamin D every single day. Now, remember this, you can take all the vitamin D in the world, but they don't measure vitamin D in the blood. They measure what's known as vitamin D25OH, which means that it gets converted from vitamin D into vitamin D25OH in the liver. So you're having some problems in through the liver. That vitamin D that you're taking is not converting into the vitamin D25OH total. So looking at this, taking enough vitamin D, being able to absorb any kind of vitamin D, those things are fine for him, but it's his ability to be able to convert it within the liver. So when you look at this, watch, liver, look at this, liver, and look at liver. And you also see his CEA markers continuing to climb up, okay? Now, the thing is you also see things starting to get better. Like you see his testosterone continue to get better. And guys, from this, the only major change that has taken place, because this person is really doing great with his lifestyle, the only major difference that has taken place is the vaccine. That's the only thing. But what's interesting is I showed you cortisol levels at 16, cortisol levels at 12, and these cortisol levels that you see here, because again, these were taken at 9:53 a.m. when they should be at its highest, cortisol levels at 5. If your cortisol levels are at 5, at basically 10 o'clock when they should be at its highest, you are not going to have any energy to be able to exercise, to be able to do anything. So energy levels are going to be very low, but just remember, cortisol goes down as inflammation and things like that start to go up. So the biggest thing that I see going on in this individual is it, yes, explains why he doesn't have any energy going on, but it also explains why there's something interesting happening in the liver, okay? In the liver. I want to show you something because this is called what's known as methylation, okay? Methylation. It's a really, really big word, but I'm going to show you where methylation happens in your body and why this actually does, in fact, frighten me, okay? So what does methylation, where is it needed? Number one, it's needed for the production of creatine, guys. This is why when, you know, people take creatine and they swear by it, they're very poor methylators and they're usually very inflamed to begin with. So you need it in order for to contract skeletal muscle. But here's what's interesting, DNA and RNA synthesis. How about this? Epigenetic gene regulation. So really what they're talking about is they're talking about any time that you have any oxidative damage to your genes, methylation is responsible for helping to repair your genes so that they don't turn cancerous, okay? Hormone regulation and detoxification. So your ability to be able to remove hormones, specifically like your estrogens, is dependent on your ability to be able to methylate. How about energy production, cell membrane repair, lipid metabolism? And you can see he has a problem with lipid metabolism by his high levels of specific cholesterol, triglyceride levels. How about neurotransmitter production? So this has everything to do with the ability to be able to make adrenaline. Also, this is involved with serotonin production. Here's what's interesting, guys, nitric oxide production, or what's known as vascular endothelial function. And basically what this is that the ability of the, basically the lining of the blood vessel, of the artery, to be able to expand and to be able to contract. This is very, very important when it comes to blood pressure control. And this is why when you have high homocysteine, typically you're going to have high blood pressure, but also you're going to have a lot of vascular inflammation, guys. When you have a lot of vascular inflammation, it makes it a lot easier for that for the arteries to throw a clot, so to develop blood clots. Now, let me ask you a question. When you look at these young athletes that are literally clutching their chest and their careers are over, or even worse, they die, could it be that when they're getting this specific jab, that it's causing a high homocysteine response, that is causing a tremendous amount of endothelial inflammation, and is causing things like blood clots and heart inflammation and things like that. And it also will impair immune function when you are not methylating properly. So that's my question, guys, is it in fact, is it causing problems with the liver? Because guys, I'm going to tell you something, is that many times looking at homocysteine is not something that a doctor is going to be measuring at all. And you can look at it and say, oh, we'll look at the immune system did recover, but it didn't recover because there's a whole heck of a lot of things that are happening in the liver. So let me ask you a question. How many of you know someone who is at post-second or got their next booster and they're really suffering? They have inflammation, they have poor energy, they're starting to see specific changes take place in their body. And the doctor just says, not a big deal, don't worry about it. They shrug it off. And meanwhile, you're setting yourself up for literally having all of these problems taking place, and not one doctor is actually trying to find the reason why. Now, do they really know that this is happening? I don't know, but I think if you look in the literature, I think that you'll see that this is not the only case that has taken place. Because guys, if you look on PubMed, I looked this up, and this is actually a case study that's known as drug-induced liver injury after COVID-19 vaccine. And what this actually does is it goes through a person who had elevated liver markers, basically felt like garbage after a COVID-19 vaccine. And even the doctor who did this case study said the only difference in this person was actually the fact that they received the vaccine. So they are starting to look at case studies, which means, guys, is that if there's a case study in PubMed, this is happening a lot more often than what they'll actually admit. But this is what's interesting too, because guys, if you go to clinicaltrials.gov, okay, clinicaltrials.gov, because the question is this individual had issues with fatty liver, had issues with liver function prior to seeing me. Why? Because his lab said so. But he had had a lot of liver damage starting out that we were really working on, and his body was starting to correct and starting to heal from. But I want you to know something, is that how many people in the United States do have some level of liver inflammation and liver disease? And it's a lot. No, it's not just caused by alcohol. It's actually caused by the overconsumption of sugar, the overconsumption of high fructose corn syrup, trans fatty acids. And then guys, if you took the average American over 40 years of age and you did a liver ultrasound, you would see in over 50% of those people, you would see that there is some kind of liver swelling and liver inflammation taking place, in which they would call it a fatty liver. So there are a lot of people in the United States who really do have a lot of liver issues, but are they actually saying, hey, you know what? Maybe they shouldn't get this vaccine because it's going to cause further damage. No, they're not. And the reason why is because there's a clinical trial that's taking place right now, and it should be finishing up December 31st. And this is what they're looking at. It's called antibody response to COVID-19 vaccines in liver disease patients. Guys, they're doing the research right now, yet they're recommending it to everyone. So let me talk to you about this study that they are doing, okay? Now, currently, the Pfizer, BioNTech, the Sinovac, and AstraZeneca, Oxford, COVID-19 vaccines are available for vaccination, and HK is Hong Kong. Now, the American Association of Liver Disease has recently published consensus statements for COVID-19 vaccination in subjects with chronic liver disease. Patients with chronic liver disease have dysregulated innate and adaptive immune response that may be associated with vaccine hyporesponsiveness. And listen to what they say next. There are no data as to whether these patients may respond differently to various vaccines. So they know this. They know that if someone has chronic liver disease, which is a lot of people in the United States, they already know that that person is going to have a very not a great response to the vaccine as far as antibody production. Yet what are they telling you? They said it's going to be a dark winter. Get boosted. Yet they are actually saying that a lot of people have chronic liver disease, and they're saying there's not even a response that is taking place. And now they're doing the studies as far as why, okay? So what they're doing is they're measuring the response that's taking place in people in chronic liver disease, and they're doing this in Hong Kong. And the study started May 21st, 2021, estimated primary completion date of December 31st, 2021. And the completion date is going to be March 31st, 2022. Okay? Isn't that amazing? Is that they're doing studies in order to figure out what is it actually doing in people who have liver disease. Guys, you are the guinea pigs. There is no doubt about it. You're the guinea pigs. They're stunning it right along with you. So here is my biggest concern looking at all of this. And it has to do with this. Is that what we need to start doing is we need to start looking at repeated exposures to this. What is it doing to the methylation pathways in people? What is it doing to their liver? Because 95% of methylation is happening in the liver. but is it causing the inability of the DNA to repair? Is it impairing detoxification? What is it doing to energy? What is it doing to your lipid metabolism? What is it doing to your vascular endothelium that is causing an inflammatory response? What on earth is it doing? And is your doctor testing for this? Is your doctor testing for this? Are they doing this level of test? Or are they just doing your basic CBC, your CMP, and then saying, I don't know what to do or what this means. Just get it done every 6 to 12 months. But we're doing testing that goes above and beyond because we really do care about what happens to these people. And quite honestly, I don't actually agree with him getting the vaccine, but it's not my job as a doctor, whether I agree or not. It's my job as a doctor to whatever he decides to do is that I love him, that I take care of him either way, because our first responsibility is to do no harm. Yet what's interesting now is that people are saying that if you choose not to get a vaccine because you have valid concerns that this might be happening, that if you even get sick with anything, that you are a burden to society. That should now be removed from society, that you should not be seen in the hospital, and that now you are considered an outcast. Well, you know what? There's a lot of people who are getting hurt by this. These are the ones who are going to be overwhelming the hospitals. And it is no wonder you keep getting boosted, you keep lowering your immune system response, you keep inflaming the liver, you keep destroying the methylation process. And it is a recipe, in my opinion, for chronic degenerative illness. Guys, health comes from within. It has nothing to do with the virus. What it has to do is it has to do with your ability to be able to resist a virus. And this is what we do in the office all the time, is that we don't weaken the person to the environment. We want to strengthen the person to be able to withstand any environment because that's how we were created. We make immune systems strong again. And not try to weaken the environment to try to suit the weakest person. Instead, we want to take that person, we want to honor the fact that they have a tremendous healing ability inside of their body that needs no help, it needs no interference. That's what it needs. And we want to make you strong again. So no matter if it's Omicron, no matter if it's Delta, no matter if whatever it is, that your immune system can withstand it, can fight it, can have an inflammatory response, and then you have a lifelong immune system response in those T cells. So guys, I hope that made sense to you. I really ask that you share this video. Please, please share it because I know that's going to be shadow banned. But just as an FYI, we're going to be taking this video. We're going to be uploading it to YouTube. It probably will get me banned, but we'll also be taking this video and we'll be uploading it to Rumble, which it won't be banned, so that you guys can continue to share this video with as many people as possible. And especially if people are having issues with specific symptoms that are going on post, because please give them hope, because yes, we do care about them too. So make sure, guys, I appreciate everyone that shares this video from the bottom of my heart. And I appreciate everybody that watches. And I'm humbled that you guys would even listen to me. I'm just a person that's in the field that has put in literally a 13-hour day today helping people. But my mission is just not in my four walls. My mission goes above and beyond to help as many people as possible. So, guys, I hope you have a great night. Please share this video again. And we will see you guys very soon.